Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Weed Wonks, the podcast that dives deep into the nerdy details, the minutiae, the ever-fun silliness that is cannabis regulatory policy. And we do it all to help our fellow policy wonks, policymakers, regulators, business members, advocates, and the kind of curious stay more informed about the ever-changing landscape of cannabis laws and regulations. Please remember to rate, subscribe, and review. I'm your host, Jordan Wellington, managing partner at VS Strategies. Thank you so much to our partners at Rootworks for helping make this podcast possible, and our amazing producer, Josh, who is doing a wonderful job making sure everything sounds perfect and I don't say anything stupid. We have a really, really cool show for you today. Really excited about this one. We're going to do a two-parter on a state that is currently in the process of moving forward with legalization and implementing adult-use cannabis. We're going to talk a little bit about the story of how we got there in this state, and then also what's going on in some of the technical details in part two. So we are talking about none other than the great state of Ohio, the state my wife is from, the state our second guest, Mr. Brian Vicente, is from, and he'll be joining us in part two to talk about all of the technical details about the law and everything else. But before we get into all those nerdy details with Brian, we got to talk about how we got here. We got to talk about the story of the campaign, because in Ohio, this wasn't done through the legislature. This was done through a ballot initiative. It was done through a vote of the people. And so before we can get into all those great specifics, we got to talk about the history of how we got here in the great state of Ohio. And to do that, we have the perfect person to join us. We have Brandon Linaw. He was the campaign manager, helped run and organize everything to make sure this got over the finish line. Brandon is with us from Strategic Public Partners, also known as SPP, where he is the managing partner, and he's been involved in Ohio for a very long time, and we are incredibly happy to have him here today. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jordan.
Awesome. Well, as we always like to do, let's get started and let's just talk a little bit about your background, what you do normally, how you got involved in cannabis policy. And then let's drag it into that story about this initiative as well as the previous ones that you've worked on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I've been in this business, the public affairs business here in Ohio for over 20 years. I've been a part of this firm since 2003. But before that, I worked in the Ohio legislature and did some policy work for a local think tank in between that. I really got involved following a 2015 ballot initiative, which was called Responsible Ohio. So I guess I'll give you a little bit of background of what that effort was. It was an effort that would have legalized both medical and adult use cannabis in the state of Ohio via the Constitution. It was well known around the country because it would have written into the state's constitution the parcel of land information where you could grow cannabis. And it very quickly got known as kind of the monopoly cannabis amendment. And that effort was not successful in 2015. It ended up only getting about 35% of the vote, which in our business is kind of a landslide loss. And coming out of that campaign, I actually got connected through a mutual friend with some folks at the Marijuana Policy Project in D.C. and started talking to them about putting together a constitutional amendment for medical marijuana that would have appeared on the 2016 ballot. So started working with the people at MPP, folks that I'm sure, Jordan, you're familiar with all throughout that organization. You know, they've obviously been involved all across the country and really haven't, you know, there hasn't been really a state that has legalized either medical or adult use that they haven't had some kind of impact on. And so we drafted an initiative. We started raising money for that. And then in the spring of 2016, we started collecting signatures and would have put a constitutional amendment on the 2016 ballot in Ohio that would have legalized medical marijuana here in Ohio.
So let's take it a little bit one step at a time, because I think you covered a tremendous amount of ground and many, many years of your life that, you know, probably deserve more than a few seconds of coverage. So you start your career, you were working at the legislature as a staffer, You spend some time at a think tank. Sounds like that was an in-between. That was the meat of the sandwich, the bread being two different stints as a staffer in the legislature. And where, what issues and topics were you really focused on? Was it, was, you know, were the legislators that you were working with healthcare, economy? I mean, this was early, this was mid 2000s, late 2000s, early 10s. So in my experience, just about every bill was a jobs bill one way or another back then, especially in the, after the, crash in the, in 2008, 2009.
Well, Jordan, I appreciate the fact that you think that I'm that young, but this was actually in the late 90s.
I'm throwing you a bone here. Nobody can see this. It's all audio. So you could have been like, yeah, man, I'm 30. Actually, I'm way younger than that.
Yeah, exactly. No, I worked in the Ohio legislature in the late 90s for a member. And, you know, he had legislation across the board. He was the chair of the Energy Environment Committee. So we did a lot of environmental policy, a lot of energy related policy, a lot of ag related policy. And then after 2 years of doing that and realizing that that wasn't going to be my future, I then went and joined an economic think tank and focused primarily on economic issues. And so I handled most of the communications and the government relations for that organization. And I did it for 5 years and really got to the point where I realized, okay, that again, that was not where I wanted to be. And so then in 2003, through a old friend of mine, I got connected with the firm that I'm in today. And fast forward 7 years later, and then I purchased the firm with my business partner. So I've been an owner of the company since 2010.
Got it.
But I've been here now. I'm in my 21st year at SPP.
Yeah. And I think I guess the reason I wanted to make sure we went back and clarified that, and I think it's really important because what that says to me is your background, among many other things, because everybody, especially when you work in a legislative office, you're an expert in everything and really don't know anything about anything. But that's how it works.
Yep.
When you're dealing with energy policy, when you're dealing with environmental policy, that is an incredibly technical area of public policy, highly regulated industries, great training for dealing with cannabis, working in an economic think tank. Great training for dealing with cannabis, right? The intersection of public policy and economic reality for operating businesses. Again, you know, I always think it's really important to understand where folks are coming from because all these things inform how you're kind of able to learn up and work on these issues or the perspective that you bring. So now you're part of this group, you're part of SPP, you're in the, let's say, in the process of becoming the managing partner and or hitting the ground on that. I guess if you say you joined in, what, 2010? So right around some of the same time that this is happening, or maybe it was even before that, my dates.
Well, and it was, yeah, it was 2003. And so there, you know, Ohio is one of about half of the states that have citizen initiated either constitutional amendments or statutes. Right. And so we started to get involved in running ballot initiatives. And that quickly became something that became my area of expertise. And what really put our company on the map was in 2009, where we legalized casino gambling in the state of Ohio. And that had been tried four previous times at the ballot box by a whole variety of groups. And the first time it was successful was in 2009, and we managed that campaign soup to nuts. And it was really, I spent, you know, the entire year of my life dedicated to that effort and really kind of put us on the map as, hey, our firm is the go-to firm if you're looking to, you know, run a ballot initiative campaign. And so over the course of the next, you know, well, ever since, I mean, it's just been a part that, you know, is not a regular every year type of effort. I mean, we don't go out seeking to run ballot issue campaigns just for the sake of running them. But you know, we're approached by groups and we find ourselves, you know, running yes campaigns. You know, we've run plenty of no campaigns. I ran an effort that was received incredible attention in 2019, that was an actual referendum effort of a law called House Bill 6, which was a scandal that has led to the imprisonment of a former Speaker of the House and just led to several indictments of First Energy executives today. I lost years off of my life being on the receiving end of millions of dollars of money being spent against our petitioners trying to keep us off the ballot from referendum-ing this nuclear subsidy that the energy company wanted. So, you know, I've kind of been the ballot issue guy in Ohio over the course of the last 20 years. And you know, I've got a personal interest in marijuana, at first medical marijuana, because I have a brother who has epilepsy. And, you know, I've seen thousands of seizures in my life. And, you know, as that issue had progressed across the country, it was something that I've always, it was something that always meant something to me. And when there was an opportunity to take what I do for a living and marry it with an issue that I'm pretty passionate about, and partner with some people that I became friends with at MPP, it made for a great opportunity for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And we certainly appreciate that because, as you noted, there was an effort in 2015 earlier on in kind of the post-Colorado Amendment 64 history of states moving forward, Responsible Ohio, which would have legalized, as you noted, medical and adult use cannabis. But let's just say was not successful. You said 35%, and that is a absolute whooping in our business. 5 points here or there is a big margin. 55-45 is a huge win. To lose, 65-35 is massive. And we know it, you know, we don't want to prognosticate too much, but it definitely didn't help that, as you noted, something that I don't think we've seen too many times, specific cultivating parcels of land were written into that ordinance. And so among the do you support marijuana or not, which is a complicated question, do you support medical marijuana or not is a complicated question. Do you support adult use marijuana or not? But you also had, I think, folks who would support adult use not being supportive of that initiative because of the way it was structured. In fact, my wife has friends from growing up that live in Ohio that, are very strong supporters of cannabis policy reform that did not vote for that initiative, given the nature of its structure. And so, cannabis advocates are not going to just rest on their laurels and say, okay, we got whooped on this one, we're going to stop. Immediately the following year, a different version of that effort was launched with Marijuana Policy Project, and you got to work in collaboration with them on a medical initiative. And that's when but before I interrupted you and we kind of paused and slowed down a little bit on that process, which, I like to do what I like to understand. That's where we kind of left off in the story. So you go through the signature collecting process. This was spring of 2016?
Yeah, so spring of 2016. So while we're focused on the signature gathering process, at the same time, the legislature, they had formed a handful of committees to explore whether or not they should pass medical legislatively. And 2016 was a presidential year. There was a strong desire not to have a cannabis-related initiative on a general election ballot during a presidential year. Conventional wisdom, and as somebody that does this for a living, I don't know how much a medical initiative alone really drives turnout. I know adult use in particular has more of an impact on turnout, but there at least is the conventional wisdom that if you're going to have medical marijuana on the ballot, it's going to turn out voters that aren't necessarily going to be supportive of folks on the Republican side or the Republican ticket. And so You had a bill that was advanced in the legislature. It was introduced and passed in just over a month's time, which I believe the folks at MPP told me it was a record in the country. And it was quite a spectacle because you literally had folks holding their nose on the floor of the General Assembly in the House and the Senate and voting for it and giving speeches about how they don't really care for it, but you know what, they're going to go ahead and vote for it. The governor signed it without any ceremony. This was former Governor Kasich. And as a result, the initiative that we were advancing, we ended up folding that initiative. And a lot of the energy that folks that had an interest in being in the industry and others was put into House Bill 523 and working to make that the medical industry in Ohio, as opposed to, you know, ignoring it and trying to continue on with a constitutional amendment.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a really challenging thing. Like, you know, the whole goal of an initiative is to get the legislature to do what you want them to do. Even when they're not willing to, right? When you believe the vote of the people will pass, but the legislature is not willing to pass a bill, that's when you run an initiative. And if the legislature is going to pass a bill, even if it's not exactly what you would have written in your initiative, it puts you in a tough spot to spend all that money and all that time and energy to pass an initiative, only to then get into what, like a war with the legislature and the people's elected representatives. Like, it's a losing battle at that point, and it's not something that you really want to do. And it's something that, you know, I've even been a part of is, you know, if the initiative is going to move forward, then you probably don't want too much activity at the legislature, or vice versa. If the legislature is going to do the thing, then you kind of need to pull the initiative, because otherwise, what are you really doing? You're kind of not making a good use of people's time. And legislature is probably a little quicker too. They got that bill done before the vote would have happened. So it feels like that's a win across the board for everybody.
I mean, that's how we viewed it. And I know there certainly were a lot of folks that had dedicated a lot of time at the signature gathering level that didn't feel that way. I mean, it's tough to you know, pour your efforts into, you know, that kind of activism at the grassroots level and then suddenly have, you know, the rug pulled out from under you. But when you looked at what was passed in the legislature, it wasn't perfect by any means, but it had the majority of the qualifying conditions that we had included. You know, our initiative did not include any of the monopoly provisions that the previous one did. It really empowered the state to, you know, award licenses through a competitive process, through applications, and much like, you know, other states that had gone before us. I mean, we viewed it and we sold it as a best practices type of initiative, much like, you know, fast forward to the 2024 or 2023 adult use initiative. I mean, you're basing it off of what has worked in other places. Mm-hmm. And then there just became the practical reality of the cost. And Ohio is one of the most expensive states to do ballot initiatives. That has only gotten worse since the pandemic. And, you know, you're looking at just millions upon millions of dollars to qualify. And then that's even before you get to the expensive, you know, the part of the campaign where you're having to, you know, run a campaign during a presidential year and doing ads and you know, paying, you know, even year presidential media rates, which are often, you know, three or four times what they would be on an off election year. So there's a whole host of factors that went in to that decision. And ultimately, you know, looking back, I mean, we absolutely did view it as a victory, not a perfect victory, but it certainly advanced the ball forward. And now we're on the cusp of adult use, or adult use is now legal in the state of Ohio. It just, you know, we're still working on, you know, the details and retail and all that type of stuff. But, you know, in hindsight, it certainly looks like a good decision.
Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously anybody that's part of a campaign, an effort, a movement to change something, they want to see it through, right? That's why they're involved in the first place. But resources are finite. And if you are able to pull this off the ballot initiative and get medical cannabis in Ohio, maybe some things would have been different if you got through the ballot. But those millions of dollars in resources can be spent in other states. And on other campaigns and other initiatives.
And absolutely. And that's, you know, with our partner at MPP and their focus and, you know, at the time, 2016, I off the top of my head, I can't remember how many states, but I mean, the issue is dramatically improved. And, you know, there's quite a few more states that are now legal. And, you know, there's been tremendous advances over the course of the last 8 years.
So coming out of the first round in Ohio, or maybe we'll call it the second round, but your first round, the first victorious round, you know, you got a ballot initiative basically approved for the ballot but pulled it because the legislature did exactly what you wanted them to do, which was authorize medical cannabis in Ohio. And now in 2023, the politics have aligned, or the politics did align, and the funding aligned, because funding is really, really important as well. Otherwise, these things aren't going to work, right? If you don't have funding, you can have all the politics in the world, and it's not going to help you. And you can have all the funding in the world, and the politics don't line up. So you kind of need them both to move forward in Ohio in 2023. There was a mini sojourn to moving forward in Michigan. So thank you very much, and props to Accomplishing Michigan. And you did mention that you worked on that one. So this would technically be your third initiative, second in Ohio, two wins under your belt, and now a third in Ohio. And so 2023 was the year for Ohio to move forward. You get started in that process. And can we just talk a little bit about the campaign in Ohio, some of the things you guys had to do, and how you ended up coming out on top?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it was a long process. We really started in the fall of 2020 with some of the discussions and early conversations about drafting the initiative and the research that went in. You know, as I mentioned, much like the 2016 effort, this was a best practices initiative. I mean, we have the benefit of having a lot of other states go before us. And that is true in Ohio. Ohio is not necessarily a trailblazer when it comes to some of these issues. I mentioned the casino effort and having, you know, failed four previous times. And, you know, we're a state that likes to see, you know, what other neighboring states do first and let them maybe kind of be the tip of the spear and see how things go. And then we'll go ahead and follow. And there's a lot of parallels when it comes to cannabis as it relates to some of the work on the gaming side and how things go from being prohibited one day to being legal the next day. And so it was a long process of drafting an initiative. We then were making sure we were shopping it around to some of the national organizations that were involved in the cannabis space, a number of the local activist organizations. We wanted to make sure that we got the provisions right to ensure that we didn't have we wanted to have something that was right size for the state. But we also wanted to make sure we didn't make any of the previous mistakes. For example, like going back to that 2015 campaign of Responsible Ohio, their first draft that they submitted did not include home grow. And one of the reasons why they had such problems with the activist community is that they initially, you know, were not going to include home grow. They eventually did in a second draft that ultimately made the ballot. But, you know, so getting those numbers right, doing the polling, ensuring that, you know, we were going to put forward something that had the best possible chance of success was really critical. And so that started in the fall of 2020. We were drafting it in to 2021. And then we had the goal of submitting it to the legislature in the late fall or winter of 2021. And, you know, probably getting way into the weeds and the back and forth of the legislative strategy and all that type of stuff. And, you know, I could nerd out on this type of stuff forever. But we were originally planning to be on the 2022 ballot. And so what happened was we submitted language and we submitted our initial batch of signatures in December 2021. We were not certified until January of 22. And there was a difference of opinion between our attorneys and the members of the legislature, where the Secretary of State essentially said, okay, you guys are good. We're going to transmit it to the legislature. The four-month window that the legislature has to consider the initiative is going to begin. And the president and speaker of the president of the Senate and speaker of the House took a different opinion and said, no, we believe that the law states that it needed to have been certified prior to the beginning of the General Assembly. So there was essentially this legal argument, difference of opinion between our campaign and the state.
So I think let's just rewind for 1 second, because I think that's the timeline here is super fascinating. So first of all, significant kudos from me especially, and probably the rest of the Nerd Squad, on the amount of time you took on that. And I think you glossed over it, but it sounds like you guys spent a lot of time working on the language and took feedback from all different sides. And not everybody that runs an initiative does that. And it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of dealing with stakeholders. And so kudos and props for an extensive and thoughtful drafting process. It's critical to coming up with a good initiative. And I don't want to gloss over that without giving you, you know, your due for that work, because it's a lot of work and you're probably not going to have anyone else in your life recognize the amount of work that went into that. So I'll take the nerd opportunity and give you the kudos on all the dorky details there. December of 21, end of the year, you go to the legislature, you get certified to go on the ballot. And then in some states, basically the legislature has a window where they can act. And if they do what the initiative says, there's no actual vote. You kind of short circuit the process. Let's say it's similar to what happened around medical. There's a technical version and then there's the fudget version. Sounds like Ohio Medical was the fudget version. There is passability where they just vote on the initiative as you've drafted it and pass it. Not exactly what happened, but that could have happened. The problem that you ran into was that there was an argument over when that window for when the legislature has to act open. And it sounds like your perspective was, we've been certified. There's more than 4 months left in the legislative session. You've got 4 months. Do it or don't. And they were like, no, doesn't count. The clock doesn't start until you've been certified and then another legislative session. Until you've been certified and then another legislative session starts off. So essentially the argument was, do you have 4 months now, or does your four-month period start in January of next year?
All right. So we're going to really nerd out.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. bring all the technicalities and all the details here.
All right. So it really begins at what we chose, how the path that we chose initially. So we went initiated statute. So the previous effort, Responsible Ohio, was a constitutional amendment. Our 2016 effort that did not make the ballot, right? That was also a constitutional amendment. In 2015, the legislature, in response to Responsible Ohio, put on the ballot what they called an anti-monopoly amendment. And that's a little strong, but it basically prohibited anyone from putting something on the ballot that would grant special privileges into the Constitution. So you couldn't assign tax rates. I mean, it's an effort to really kind of bar groups from going to the Constitution. And so from the get-go, I always argued that we should be going the route of initiated statute, which is the route of putting it into the law. Mm-hmm. And that route does include a two-stage petition window where you collect the first round of signatures, you submit it to the legislature. The legislature has a four-month window, which they can either do nothing, and then you get another window of 90 days to collect a second round to put it on the ballot. They could make changes to it and pass something. And you would still get 90 days because they've chosen to make changes. Or they could pass it as you've presented it. And then obviously you wouldn't get the 90-day window. And so that was a strategic decision we made, because in the campaign world, and this is, and we'll get into this when we talk about the arguments used against us. The number one argument against legalizing marijuana in Ohio would have been marijuana doesn't belong in the Constitution. And that is really what sunk the 2015 campaign, because it was, you know, trying to put a monopoly into the Constitution. We had to avoid that because the public supports legalization. They support it strongly in Ohio. But it, you know, Ohioans view the state constitution as, I've said this a million times to clients, they think the state constitution is lowered into the ground every night like the U.S. Constitution. they don't really see the two things as different, right? So mm-hmm. you don't want to put all this type of stuff into the Constitution. So that was the route that we chose to take. What happened was when we submitted the signatures, we were actually deficient. And so we ended up having to collect additional signatures in January of 22. And so that delayed our certification until very late January 22. And that is where the difference of opinion legally occurred between our campaign that said, well, no, the law says we just had to submit. And the state was saying, no, we're arguing that you need to be certified. And so what we were presented with was a case where the state would do nothing. We would essentially have to start from scratch and collect that first round of signatures at the cost of millions of dollars. Or what we chose to do, which was we filed a lawsuit against the state and we sought a declarative judgment where we wanted a judge to essentially adjudicate this dispute. You know, tell us who's right. And coming out of that, we actually settled with the state. And the settlement said that the Secretary of State would resubmit the language to the legislature at the following General Assembly. So that would have started in 2023 in early January.
And so the consequence of this, because it's always like, you know, there's what the laws the lawsuit are about, and then there's the why people care. And ostensibly what this did was push you from the 22 to the 23 ballot. And I would, without over-speculating, it would seem as though part of the reason that this came up is that there was a desire by some folks to push this to the following ballot. Because otherwise, do they really care which vote it's on? So it seems like there had to be at least some interest in having this happen a year later. Which is fine. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's always challenging, right? The month you get delayed by 12 months, it's a calamity. 13 months later, you're like, well, shit, it doesn't really matter because I'm here now. And, you know, yeah, we lost a year and that stinks, but at least we're here now. So, you know, outside of the fact that, you know, this legal battle sounds absolutely fascinating, at least for maybe a small number of people about when does the actual clock start and when does the timing start? Because I find it really interesting. And all this maneuvering, at the end of the day, there was a variety of political and legal maneuvering that bumped you back a year. And we can, I don't think you and I really have any desire to speculate what and why and how, because I don't know that that's really going to do us any good because it's in the past. And we're here now and we're in the now. And in the now, we are successful. So, okay, so the legislature, they don't adopt your initiative writ large. It turns out, shockingly, they didn't just vote it in, although the will of the people seemed to be on your side, so that's a win. And that means that starting in January of last year, about 12 months ago, you had to run a campaign. And so I just want to talk a little bit about that, and then we can get into kind of where we're at now. But running campaigns around cannabis, especially in a state like Ohio, is probably very interesting today. Because you probably went in with a polling advantage, I would assume, pretty significant one at this point. So, you know, you're kind of playing with the lead, right? It's a very different playbook than when you're trying to come from behind or you're, you know, tied. You're playing with a lead. When you go into a campaign where you're playing with the lead, what was the strategy that you had to ensure that you didn't get tripped up in terms of, you know, what were the main contentions or what did you feel like you needed to do as a campaign to make sure you were successful in November, given the fact that you started out with, you know, some wind in your sails?
I repeated over and over that the goal is not to make mistakes. And you try to run a mistake-free campaign. It sounds crazy, but I told folks we want to run a boring campaign. And, it, you know, when you're in the lead, and you're right, it's a totally different mentality. You're essentially, I'll go back a little bit. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Polling advantage. It was similar to what we saw in Michigan. We actually started off better than where we began in Michigan. And that's the nature of how this issue has played out nationally and in states like Ohio and in the Midwest.
It's half a decade later, right? We keep moving up.
Yeah.
So you start out an even better spot in Ohio because you were 5 years later, ostensibly.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's only moving in one direction. And so we were always in the high 50s, low 60s kind of, you know, level of support, right? So, you know, there's a whole segment of the voting public that we don't care about. And so, you know, and the other element is that we knew we were not going to just have ungodly amounts of resources. So we had to be incredibly efficient with the dollars that we did have. So that meant we were going to run a very targeted campaign. We're going to run a campaign that was going to take advantage of technology. We were going to be try to speak to the people that we only the people that we really wanted to speak to. And that segment of folks were essentially what we call soft yeses. So people that are like, you know what, I think it's about time that we do this. Michigan did it. I mean, you know, a couple of the ads that we did run, they were focused on Michigan. And that's not a that's not a mistake. I mean, our polling said that one of our biggest, most effective messages was the fact that Ohioans drive across the border and they shop in Michigan. And we had data that suggested that some of the most trafficked dispensaries in the country are right across the border in the state of Michigan. And, you know, Ohio and Michigan are a bit of a rival.
Yeah.
So, as you well know. And so, you know, that was something that played into our hands. But, you know, the strategy was always find those soft yeses and assure them that what we are doing is putting forth a proposal that makes sense for the state, and that was done in a thoughtful manner, that it was based off of best practices, and you know, do it in a way that is just really straightforward and talks about the facts, and you know, just reminds people that this is happening all across the country. You know, it's in our neighboring states. And, you know, we took a lot of what worked in other places. I mean, it's no big surprise that we were, you know, coalition regulate marijuana like alcohol, just like Michigan was, because in voters' minds, that's where you've seen a big sea change in how voters view marijuana, is that there is the recognition that it is safer than alcohol, you know. Our website was, you know, regulate, like alcohol.
Yeah.
And that was a big part of the message, because I think that, you know, over the course of the last couple of decades, people have come to realize that is the case with marijuana.
Yeah. And as always, props and shout outs to Steve Fox, one of the forebearers of that messaging that I think is holds true, right? Like, when you think about it politically, people can reference alcohol. They understand, they know what it means. And they say, okay, this isn't as harmful as alcohol. We should regulate it like alcohol. I know lots of people that use cannabis. They seem to be decent people. You know, we don't need to put them in cages. And then you get that messaging across. I really like what you brought up about the targeting, right? And I think that that's a really interesting thing for folks to pay attention to. If you have unlimited resources, you can target the entire voter pool, right? Because you can target everybody. Now, you might not think it's a good idea, but you can. We don't live in an unlimited resource world in cannabis policy anymore by a wide margin. And so you got to think about who you can spend your dollars on trying to persuade, because that's what campaigns are. It's the art of persuasion. And so you have what you refer to as soft yeses. So there are hard yeses, people who basically are going to vote yes almost no matter what. They're theoretically still persuadable, but they're pretty much a hard yes. And then there's hard no's, people who are not going to vote for cannabis policy reform come hell or high water, right? Be interesting to figure out where my in-laws fit in that camp. But, you know, I'll have to check with my wife to see how they voted in the end. But then there's your soft yeses, right? And since you're playing with the lead, that is the group you chose to target, which I think makes a lot of sense. Who are the people that are probably going to vote yes? feel like they're going to vote yes, but need a little bit of comfort. They need to hear, hey, this is really well regulated. Hey, this is based on best practices. Hey, we have strict youth protection in here. Hey, there's going to be restrictions on advertising. You're not going to see cannabis cartoons on every billboard targeting children, right? Like the things where they're like, I support this, but I'm a little concerned here about, you know, some of the unintended consequences, usually around public safety and youth. And so you spent your limited dollars targeting those people to say, hey, we are following tried and true methods. We are using best practices, and we are really coming at this from a very responsible perspective to help shore up those soft yeses, right? And that is, at the end of the day, I think, a very logical strategy. You know, it'd be nice to speak to all voters. And if you had unlimited dollars, I'm sure you guys would have spoke to all voters. But in the reality of what you were operating with, speaking to those folks and saying, hey, we know you're okay with this, but here's why you should be okay with our initiative, right? Here's why when you vote that day, you should vote yes. Because there are people who support cannabis policy reform, but end up voting no on initiatives, right? And it really always boils down to that moment when they're in the polling booth, or maybe in other states, you just get to vote from home, like here in Colorado. We're big proponents of voting from home. It's pretty wonderful when you're at your house with your family making decisions. But one way or another, you want to make sure those people who have been saying yes to the pollster follow through on election day, and you keep as many of those folks as possible. So in that world, you're able to target those voters, and you're able to come out in November in a very successful election. And so before we get into what's going on a little bit now and some of the fun stuff that's happening, and obviously any other about the campaign you want to share, but what was the final score? We always want to know, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was a landslide. We won 57% of the vote. And that's a 14-point win. And as you mentioned earlier, in our business, I mean, that's a landslide. And what's amazing is that it was incredibly consistent throughout the two previous years. Nearly every poll, was within just a handful of points of that number. To give you an idea of the overall cost of the campaign, and, you're talking about, the luxury of being able to target whomever you want versus, being smart and making sure that you're being efficient. Ballot qualification cost about $7 million. And the campaign was about $1.3 million. I had reporters calling, asking if we were even running any ads because they weren't seeing them. And, the idea that in a state like Ohio, with as many media markets and as expensive as the place it is to run a campaign. Oh, and by the way, we also had, our airways being saturated because we had abortion rights on the ballot as well. The idea that I'm going to, put money into broadcast or even cable. I mean, do you have a cable subscription? I haven't had a cable subscription in 12 years.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
We put all of our resources. We produced two really great ads that hit all of our top messages, and we put it was entirely on streaming platforms and in digital and online. And you're talking about just making sure you're only targeting your soft yeses and kind of avoiding the hard no's and the hard yeses. I mean, I didn't see one of my own ads until election day, and it was on Hulu. And, I was like, okay, this is good because I'm not in my target demographic.
So sadly, you and I are both too old to be in your target demographic.
Exactly.
That ship has sailed, a couple gray hairs ago, at least.
But yeah, exactly. So we came in at 57. It was very consistent throughout the campaign. I will tell you that there was a little bit of a nervousness on election night because as the numbers were coming in and as, it was interesting that the abortion right amendment was also tracking at about 57% in the polls, right? So when the first couple of numbers or the first counties that started to report, they were the urban counties, you get some of the early vote, Because in Ohio, they count the early vote prior to election day. So that first batch of votes that you see is the early stuff, right? And I noticed we were underperforming against the abortion rights. And I had a bit of a panic moment. And it wasn't by a month, it wasn't by much, but it was enough to make me think, okay, well, if we're underperforming in the Democrat counties, I wonder what's going to happen in the Republican counties. And, you know, I didn't have the crosstabs with me to kind of dig through. We're actually at dinner, and my spokesperson, who is just a great guy, his name's Tom Herron. He's looking at me as I'm reading some of these numbers, and he's like staring at me. He's like, is there something wrong? and so here I was taking a look at this underperformance, thinking, okay, I'm trying to maybe extrapolate this out, going, okay, this could be a real problem. Well, guess what happened? We overperformed in Republican counties. Because guess what? This is not the days of this being a Democrat and Republican issue, or you're getting cut down those lines are long gone. And so, you know, we essentially made up for an underperformance in Democrat counties with an overperformance in Republican counties. And, you know, when you look at our map of the counties that we won, it just does not fall along those, you know, red blue lines like I think some people still think that it does. And I think that helps to explain some of the disconnect that you see between policymakers and the public. But, you know, now that we have the vote behind us and, you know, 2.26 million Ohioans have said yes to legalized cannabis for adults, and a hell of a lot of those people were conservative Republicans, I think it's helping to kind of change the narrative of how this issue should be viewed in the political spectrum.
Yeah, absolutely. And without question, you don't get to like 65-70% aggregate approval rating at a national level in a country that's pretty split at this point in their Democrat to Republican allegiances without having some of that bleed over that just defies what would be past wisdom and I think isn't current truth. And I love the story of you checking crosstabs and looking at some of this stuff as polling data comes in, because I just can think about in my mind many, many nights where it's like, what's the first polling numbers out? And then you're like, you hear that data and it doesn't perform exactly the way that you're thinking it would. And as a result, you end up like being like, okay, well, what are they actually talking about? And I remember we did the same thing on psychedelics reform here in Colorado when we were looking at some of the data. And it's not just, it just becomes a multi-layered question of like, okay, which counties have reported? How many votes have they reported? What are they reporting? Are they reporting current votes? Are they reporting votes made day of, and then they're going to go back and count early? Is it early? Are they doing all that? And in Colorado, where we're all mail-in, it's even trickier because behavioral dynamics shift when you go from all in-person, mail or in-person, to mail, right? Like, I think all of those things change people's behavioral dynamics and who is going to vote early and who's going to vote when. And how many people are going to show up and everything else. So I love that story because it's a very visual thing that I think a lot of us that have worked in this area have sat there watching early results come in and be like, oh my God, like, is this representative or is this really noisy? And if it's noisy, which direction is it noisy in? And to have it come out and be like, well, one of the lessons here is this issue doesn't break down along Democrat and Republican lines is an amazing lesson to come out from, and probably really important for the future of cannabis policy in Ohio, which tends to be a very purple state, have a lot of conservative districts. And so it's important to show those conservative folks that their constituents do care about this, that this issue performed far better than they would have thought in their district. And then, you know, quality representatives are there to represent their people and their constituents. And so they will alter their perspective on how this issue will play and hopefully will result in, you know, better outcomes and better policy that's made for the state.
Yeah, I think we won 30 out of 33 Senate districts in the state. And I can, you know, and some of those were narrow, right? Of course. Mm-hmm. But I forget what specific county it was, but I can remember reading some county had come in, and I'm sitting there in the little war room that we had set up, and I closed my computer and was like, okay, yeah, we won. I mean, you get a county that is historically known as blood red, and we just pulled 51%. We're going to be okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And over the course of the last 6 years and doing this and, really trying to drive that home and there's just kind of, there's something that there needs to be a reevaluation of the issue as it relates to red, blue. And I think that it is happening. And as you do have these very public votes that occur that do not break down on party lines. And you're absolutely right. I mean, Ohio is a state that Trump won twice by 8 points. Okay. We're no longer a purple state. We're a deep red state as it relates to the presidential politics. But yet, we also had a landslide victory to legalize marijuana. So, in the old way of thinking about things, those two things shouldn't be able to coexist, but they do.
Yeah. And I think it's just the evolution of the body politic, right? Of how their perception on things. So landslide victory, we only have you for another couple of minutes and then we'll get into part two about all the technical details with the expert on that, Brian Vicente. But before we drop, there's been some really interesting stuff going on in Ohio post-election, maybe felt a little spicier at the outset, seems to have calmed down a little bit. But just, could you give us a quick lay of the land of where things are at? Like, you win the election, and then there were some rumblings, and let's just talk for a minute about, what those rumblings are and where they kind of currently sit today.
Yeah, so they're kind of in the immediate aftermath of the victory. So the law takes effect 30 days after the vote. So on December 7th, marijuana technically becomes legal in Ohio. There was a bill passed out of the Ohio Senate that would have made a variety of changes to the law. And it was supported by the majority of the Senate, obviously, also strong support from the governor. I think there's been a conflation of a couple of different things, that policymakers are concerned about. There's issues related to kind of hemp derived products that are available that are of a great concern to members of the legislature, and that's one item. But that was passed out in December, and there were a number of hearings both in the Senate, and I believe also the House has had some hearings as well. As it stands right now, we're kind of in this limbo period where there isn't really necessarily a path forward in the House, or there isn't the same level of momentum, at least, that exists in the Senate for passing something in the House in the immediate term. So I know that there's members over there that are taking a hard look at some provisions that they may want to see changed in the initiated statute that we passed. But as we stand right now on February 12th, I think the path forward is pretty uncertain.
Yeah. And so I think that's a really good call, right? So first, we want to separate out concerns around intoxicating hemp products and their not being regulated at all in Ohio and potential youth access issues and everything else. We're going to put that aside. That is not your initiative. Those are concerns about another issue. And policymakers have significant concerns in Ohio, along with many, many other jurisdictions, about basically hemp-derived and converted cannabinoids and the public health implications of what was clearly an unintended authorization. Then you have the secondary issue of potential changes to the initiative that you guys actually passed. And I think you're running into kind of, one, problems conflating those two among politicians, because, at the end of the day, they are interrelated, but, you have to really take them separately, because you passed an initiative, the intoxicating hemp stuff isn't part of your initiative, and the governor and the Senate are interested in making some changes to your initiative. It's not clear if the House is actually going to take up those changes, move them forward through the process, regardless of whether and what they do about intoxicating hemp. We're going to put that completely off to the side. What really matters here is your initiative. And at least at this juncture, no changes have been made. And by that, we mean bills passed by both houses, signed by the governor. So the initiative you passed is still good law in the state of Ohio. There are some conversations about tweaking things. That's how politics work. You change everything every year, whether the legislature passed a bill or a citizen initiative. That's what they're there to do, is they're there to change the laws and make them better. But I think, you know, taking a quick pause, you know, again, kudos, right? Like, although there is some momentum to tweak some of the things that you've done, it's not like the legislature showed up the next day and had to rewrite the whole darn thing, right? I think it is a testament to the work that was put in that we talked about earlier in terms of trying to get the language right to say, hey, we might want to change some things. Well, you don't run for office unless you have an opinion about things you want to change. I think that's an inevitability. But it was not like, oh my God, we've got to get in here and gut this thing. And that's not what happened. That's a very different story. And I think that that's a testament to the hard work that you guys did, as well as the voting outcome, right? It's really hard to change 50. It's hard to change a big win like that, a 14-point win. 2-point win's a lot easier to change. You win 51-49, a lot easier to change things than 57-43. And so that's where we're at in the story right now. There may be some changes made by the legislature. We'll have to see. That conversation hasn't stopped, and it will never stop. It will continue far past our time on this planet, because that's what the legislature is there to do, is to change things. But the administrative agency has moved forward. They've promulgated their first set of regulations. I believe comments were due on that this past Friday, so just a couple days ago. Folks submitted their comments, and they're working on the rulemaking process. And if the legislature tweaks some things, they'll just have to pivot. That's what we're here for when we work in public policy, is hurry up, wait, someone makes a decision, and then you pivot and make some lemonade or put out a fire or maybe a little bit of both. So that's where we're sitting right now. And we'll get into all the details in part two with Brian Vicente about what was in the initiative, as well as the details on this rulemaking and what we expect on the future timeline. But before we wrap with you, Brandon, is there anything that you kind of want to share, last thoughts on how we got here and how monumental this has been and moving things forward in the Midwest?
No, thanks Jordan for having me. I obviously love nerding out and talking about this type of stuff and doing some of the deep dives and looking at the different elements of the campaign. You know, this has been one of the most rewarding experiences of my life of being part of this effort, not just here, but in Michigan and previously in medical. It means a lot to me personally. And, you know, I know a lot of people's lives have been positively affected by it. And it's great when you're able to marry something that you do professionally with something that you are pretty passionate about. So it's meant a lot to me, and I'm really proud of what the entire team has been able to accomplish, and we still got a lot of work to do, I'm just proud to be a part of the effort.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today, but also for all the work for moving medical forward in Ohio, Michigan, and adult use in Ohio now. There's a lot of folks whose lives are better because of it, including members of my family and friends of ours. So thank you so much for that work. We really appreciate it. And with that, we'll just say stay nerdy, everybody.